Hey, so before we begin the episode, I wanted to give a hello. All of us want to give a hello to the nice people. Hello. Hello.
Hello.
To the nice people at the East Texas Paranormal Conference, where you were invited to be for the last few days. And it was a real treat, albeit a really soggy treat. I packed a pair of dry socks. It's like a delicious cookie that you got left in the rain. And you know, it's still tasty, but
right, that's true. Or like one of those tiny boxes of cereal that you pour the milk into.
Oh right, but it was from like last year.
Yes, last year's box of cereal.
But your favorite brand of cereal.
That cookie would never get abandoned in the rain.
It's true.
That cookie is safe.
Yes.
And digested.
And white chocolate. Ooh.
Okay, I don't know where y'all are going.
I think we got distracted.
Okay. Anyway, so we had a great time. We got to stand on stage and talk about demons for well over our allocated hour.
Mm-hmm.
And
as we do.
Got to buy lots of neat stuff.
Uh-huh.
I bought a rock.
I bought a magic wand made out of nuts.
It's
not
magnetic.
Like squirrel nuts, but like mechanical nuts.
Goodness gracious, what primitive tribe are you from?
Like nuts that squirrels eat is
okay.
What I mean.
Okay,
you know,
okay.
tree nuts and whatnots. Yes, and I bought a lovely ring.
Mm-hmm. So, favorite things from the weekend?
I would say my favorite thing was ghost hunting on Saturday night because we got to go to several different locations and chat with some really interesting people and get to meet some of the ghosts that populate downtown Mineola.
Yeah, I felt like Jenny was mocking me personally.
Yes, she was.
I love that little curio shop that half the con was in. It was so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
The old curio store, there were so many neat baubles and things to buy, and it all just felt like every corner was some really amazing thing, and it's neat that they're a part of that. It's a part of their world.
Yeah, I like that a lot too.
And I like that someone tried to exercise me but decided I wasn't worth it.
I got to drag every single person I met and showed them the Michigan Uper light, which glows under black light. It was so much fun. I was like, hey, look at this rock. Click, shine. Hey, look at this rock.
Mm-hmm. Can we talk about the magical glowing quartz you bought?
Oh,
Victoria doesn't know this story yet.
No.
It's a sad story.
Oh, did it break?
There was a... No.
Okay.
My heart.
He tested it with a black light and it glowed really pretty yellow.
Uh-huh.
Glowed blue. So there was this piece of quartz with an inclusion in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
An inclusion is a fancy word for crack.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it looked like that inclusion fluoresced under black light. Which it could have been calcite, it could have been fluorite, it could have been your mom. I don't know.
Okay.
And it made it the whole con. I was like, well, if no one gets this, I will. So at the end of the con, I buy it. I get it home. And I peel the sticker off the bottom with the price tag on it.
It was blue.
And it stopped fluorescing. It was the price tag was fluorescing under black light and making the whole crystal glow.
Oh.
It's just, I mean, it's a beautiful piece of quartz. I'm not unhappy. I am unhappy. Uh-huh. But I'm dumb.
Could you just put another price tag on it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a big thank you to the wonderful welcome people of Mineola, and it was so nice to spend the weekend with you.
Yay. Thank you so much. We had
thank
a blast.
You.
We really appreciate
it.
And it was great. The audience was great that we had, and it was wonderful to talk to people afterwards, too.
On a slowdown note, we have had a conference or something every month, and for the last two, building up to the Devil 24 conference in Canada on the 15th of May, and we are feeling a little swamped, and that has slowed our release schedule down somewhat. So expect more content, in particular the panel from Canada, following May 15th.
And sins. We still have some sins we got to get through.
Right.
That's true.
And I'm so mad about that.
No, I get wrath. You have to sit back. Wrath is fine.
I get wrath. Wrath is mine. Pride is yours.
Okay, so we still have prath
and
ride.
That's the thing I'm best at, so.
Okay. Is that it? Do we just have prath and ride?
Prath and ride? Yes, we do.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I think that's it. Oh, and the secret mystery sins.
That's right.
Yes. Which you've already covered.
Uh-huh. The fun.
Is that like the sixth love language? Which is tacos.
The deadly love languages.
Oh, there is an episode.
But next, we're going to talk about envy.
I had a dream last night that felt me full of fright. I dreamt that I was with the devil below in his great big fiery hall, where the devil was giving a ball. I checked my coat and hat and started gazing at the merry crowd who came to witness the show. And I must confess to you, there were many there I knew.
Hello.
Hi.
At the devil's ball.
Hello, and welcome to The Dispatchist, a friendly conversation about hell and some other stuff. This is episode 81, Stupid Envy Experiments, and with me today are Jacob.
Hello.
And Jamin.
Hello.
And I'm Victoria.
Why do you get to be host?
Yeah.
See, I have the evil eyes behind me, so you can't hurt me.
Those eyes are pretty evil.
So, yes, we are, as you may imagine, we're going to talk about envy today. And in a previous episode, I admitted that this is the sin that I am most guilty of. And in reading about it, yes, I realize that I am still guilty of it. However, maybe I can't help it. Spoiler.
I have realized that I did not even remotely understand envy as an experience, and my eyes have been opened, and this is the first time in my life where I think that opening with a dictionary definition is going to be useful.
Okay. Yeah.
See? But not right now. There's other things to talk about now.
We have a lot of
things. I was
going to
say the dictionary definition confused me 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then the online dictionary changed sometime in the past 2 weeks. Like, it had an intro, and today it has a different intro.
Oh, weird.
It wasn't me.
Somebody's editing the Wikipedia.
Envy's great. Do it.
Do it more.
So, my spooky things from the internet thing, when we announced our episode of Sloth, immediately I got an email from the Vatican advertising a sermon about sloth. Before I shut down my computer that night, that was in my inbox.
Wow.
Listen to our podcast?
I think they do.
I thought you'd gotten like an ad for sloths, like you could actually have a pet sloth.
No. My niece is very into sloths right now. We think that's her totem animal, or at least we've designated that as her totem animal.
So she stopped trying to kill you with your own necklaces?
No, she likes to shove my necklace into my mouth now. Like, that is very exciting. The fact that I wear a necklace that fits into my mouth has really just captivated her.
I mean, it captivates me too, and I have to stop myself from shoving it in your mouth.
Mm. In fairness, I would end up with my necklace in my mouth anyway.
It's true. Yeah. I chew on pens. That's my problem.
I wish I could chew on pens.
Pens are good.
Why can't you chew on pens?
That would be being envious.
That's right. You envy my teeth.
Can I talk about a household problem I've been having, though? This is a deep concern for me. Mm-hmm. My roommate has been buying wards.
So tell me more about this.
I don't know. He was saying that his wards were coming in from Etsy, and it kind of bothered me. I'm nervous because, like, the presence of apotropaics in our house is problematic.
What kind of wards are you buying, Jamin?
To be fair,
mm-hmm.
he's making some vast assumptions.
Okay.
And it wasn't Etsy. It was eBay China.
Oh, okay.
Even better.
I bought a giant ass selenite crystal. It's massive.
What does it do?
And selenite as a crystal is known for recharging other crystals for when those crystals lose their energy.
Oh, so it's like an uninterruptible power supply for crystals.
Well, exactly. Amethyst and your agate out, you put on the selenite.
Okay.
Right? Oh, okay.
And selenite can be used in warding off evil.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And he specifically said, please don't ward evil off from this house. I like it.
Yeah.
I have not yet done so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm not saying I will.
Okay. But you're not saying you won't.
But it was $8.
How big is this crystal?
Do you want to see it?
Sure. It's always that good makes, podcasting.
That makes for great podcasting. Yeah.
Great So, it
oh,
is.
Oh, wow.
Jamin is holding an arrow. It's like the shape of one of those sticky note things that you get on a sticky tab.
A page
about,
pointer or
about
whatever.
9 inches wide.
Eight inches.
Made of that weird fiber optic crystal.
Oh, and it's got a little... Okay, so did you draw those on there?
I did. I'm planning on dremeling that out. It's a little dinger.
Uh-huh.
And then a Chinese character, meaning graduation or completion.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
Neat.
Okay. Very
I feel
cool.
slightly...
Does
I
anyone feel evil in the room? Not my problem.
Okay, I feel slightly safer in my less safeness.
Oh, dear. Uh-huh. Well, that's
actually,
cool.
Just splintered in my hands.
Oh!
Which is why it cost $8.
Oh, no. So...
You bought imperfect selenite, John.
So, no, it's just a regular old crystal. I'm not protecting anybody from anything.
Okay.
All right.
I might be casting black magic spells, but that's not protection. Promise.
Okay. Always a bad idea to do that, by the way. You don't want to do anything.
In this house, we practice necromancy.
In this house, we believe in bringing spirits back from the dead. Did anybody bring anything to the party?
I did bring some unusual entertainment today.
Okay.
For our entertainment, we'll be watching a gargantuan and terrible three-headed spider-hoof devil stabbing hypocrites with a pitchfork as he drives them through a mountain range, echoing with the screaming of the damned forever.
Wow, that's like a Western.
It's got a high cinematic level.
Uh-huh. It sounds like Elon Musk's Boring Company.
Oh. A little. I don't know what a spider-hoof devil entails.
I don't know why, but I am imagining like sort of a Sergio, is it Sergio Leone? The like, kind of Western.
Mm.
Like a surreal sort of Western.
Yeah,
with
yeah,
real
like
spaghetti.
Devil with like mm-hmm. 8 tiny legs dancing uh-huh. around.
Well, I brought a drink and I'm very excited about this drink.
Ooh, yes.
I, even though I didn't sound excited there.
Well, no, I still am like very thoughtful about the sloth cocktail from last time.
That sounded really good too. So it is a Greek mati cocktail.
Ooh.
Yeah, so it is the Mati is the evil eye, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Oh, how pretty.
Isn't that
right?
Pretty?
That's amazing.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
It's got like a beautiful sky blue base and like an iris of like pale blue surrounding a dark blue dot. It is so beautiful.
It really is. So it has one part curacao, blue curacao, one part vodka. So a part is equal to 30 milliliters, by the way.
Okay.
4 parts lemonade.
Interesting. Coconut milk?
Oh, it's got 3/4 cup thickened cream, 2 tablespoons caster sugar, and 1 blueberry.
It is quite the prettiest drink I've seen in ages.
It really is. Half fill the cocktail shaker with ice cubes. Add 1 part the blue curacao into the cocktail shaker, the 1 part vodka. Shake ingredients and using cocktail strainer, pour into chilled martini glass. Pour the lemonade into the martini glass. Then add 3/4 cup thickened cream into a clean cocktail shaker, adding 2 tablespoons of sugar. Shake that and then pour that slowly over the drink. And then add 1 tablespoon blue curacao into the leftover cream. And
the
then blueberry pour that
is the
in.
Eye.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And then like, put the blueberry
like,
in.
Like most people.
This is a little bit of a trigger warning that I will be talking about eyeballs. I know some people don't like eyeballs talk.
I don't think it's eyeballs. I'm scared of your stories.
Oh, and this one, it's pretty mild for most of my stuff. There's no cannibalism involved.
Your background picture today is a bunch of evil eye warding charms.
Mm-hmm. And they're lovely.
They really are.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want one.
What is your background, Jamin? It's a coyote with a moon?
I typed into Bing, two coyotes being envious.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
And it's cute.
It is. I don't see envy there.
I don't know what happened.
It's Bing. Lovely.
It is lovely.
Mine is the Wicked Queen looking into her mirror. Arthur Rackham style.
The is it Ozma of Oz with the I forgot who she is who has the shelves of heads that she puts on?
Oh, Queen Mombi.
Yeah, that would have been a good one.
Well, this like the evil queen from Snow White is the crystallization of envy.
That's true.
Jealousy and destruction at the same time.
Yep. Good call.
Yeah.
This one is honestly pure marketing. Yes. But Jimmy John's has a Cajun chicken sub plastered on the side of their building as you drive by it. And I had no choice but to drive in and get three. So it's, I know we're nowhere near Cajun land, but it's kind of tasty.
Oh, I do wonder if Cajun chicken sub is gay slang that I'm not aware of yet.
If so,
write your congressman.
That sounds delicious.
It's there's crunchy bits inside. Like there's crunchy, spicy Cajun bits.
Cajun bits.
More gay slang.
I do have some religious news that is at least somewhat infernally inspired. This is a few days out of date, but the article from a San Francisco news station.
Oh, yeah.
San Francisco's Hunky Jesus Contest to happen rain or shine.
So do we know who won?
You know, probably. I could probably look it up. It's been a few days. This is an Easter thing. Mm-hmm. But the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, who are a delightful group of gay drag nuns, put on a contest or just event for people dressed as Hunky Jesus or Foxy Virgin Marys.
Oh, okay.
But it was going to rain. So the question of whether they would, there's going to be a windstorm actually. So might have also had a flying nun moment as well.
I was going to is there a wet wimple contest?
If not.
Yeah. And there's a picture of a Playboy bunny holding a sign saying she has risen.
Oh my gosh. Well, damn. I wish we had been there for that.
Oh, gosh, the Virgin Marys are just delightful. Yeah, I'll have to link to this.
Okay, that sounds amazing. So one of the things that I found out about is a local musician that I'd never heard of before that seems right up our alley. His name is Caleb DeCasper.
Okay.
And so he's kind of like this very goth, sort of very theatrical singer who...
Oh, like a demigod.
Yeah, he's amazing. So I'll send y'all a link. But I don't know how I haven't heard about him. And there's even a Caleb DeCasper Day. The city even has a Caleb DeCasper Day.
Wow.
Yeah. It's so I want to see him live sometime soon. A friend of mine just told me about him. So he seems like he would fit in really, really well at the Velvet.
Hi, Caleb.
Casket.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. He's wearing like radiant halo thing and golden crustaceans on his shoulders.
He's amazing. He really is amazing. He kind of has some Klaus Nomi vibes.
Yes, but like a sacred and divine Klaus Nomi.
Right. Not a Martian, but like avenging angel or something.
He must be real. He has a Wikipedia page.
He's real. And so the things that I just found out about that I'm sad, but I'm going to incorporate from now on, I found out about two research items. One that I have to probably go to the Ransom Center to look at, but there was
tragic.
I know. But there's a book, a 1962 book called Seven Deadlier Sins. It's called The Seven Deadly Sins, but it was the result of Ian Fleming of James Bond fame trying to get a bunch of Britain's top writers to write about the Seven Deadly Sins for the London Sunday Times. And they included W.H. Auden, Cyril Connolly, Patrick Leigh-Fermor, Edith Sitwell, Christopher Sykes, Evelyn Waugh, and Angus, or Evelyn Waugh, and Angus Wilson. And so that never happened, but they did publish a book that the foreword is by Ian Fleming. And so all I know about it is that Ian Fleming actually proposed in his foreword new sins.
What?
Yes. So Ian Fleming's newer deadly sins are avarice, cruelty, snobbery, hypocrisy, self-righteousness, moral cowardice, and malice. And his he also has deadly virtues, which
like
is a new
concept spin.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Frugality. Go ahead.
Most of those sins are not actually new. They're just daughters.
I like snobbery.
Snobbery is the best one.
So seven deadly virtues.
Yes. So frugality, charity.
Wow.
Sociability. And I think these are all like when taken to the extreme. Deference, which could be
that's a maddening one if you're not careful.
Yep.
It, for a Brit, Jiminy Christmas.
Oh, fair. Mm-hmm. I didn't even context that.
Right.
And neatness in excess, which I'm fully behind.
No problem there. Not guilty.
Uh-huh. Pathological cleanliness.
Still not a problem.
And chastity leading to frigidity. So I
leading
found that very
what?
Interesting. Frigidity. So like I had, you know, like chastity, again, in excess leads to frigidity.
Like the brand fragility. Of refrigerator. Frigidity air.
Frigidity. Yes.
Frigid air
leads to refrigeration.
Frugality, huh?
Frugality. Such as I think, yeah. Like being stingy.
A cheapskate and buying... Mm-hmm. Off-market crystals?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because you got a splinter, dude. You got
a splinter. Damn it, Fleming.
That happened when you were teasing, I won't say threatening, teasing Jacob about cleansing the house from evil.
That was instant karma.
Uh-huh, because we know Jacob.
I was even a little bit snobbish on how cheap my crystal was.
I would say that's the only one those two are the only ones that work. Sorry. Yeah. I thought maybe I could throw something else out there, but no. Yes. So all of these are, when it's in excess, and we talked about this with one of the other sins where, you know, if you like being too pious, like nuns were often accused of this.
The gluttony of delicacy.
Yeah. Like zealotry is bad. So that's the other thing that I actually have something from today, but I wish I had looked at with other sins, is there's a great article called Singing Sin, and it is about Michelle Behaim's Little Book of the Seven Deadly Sins, a German pre-Reformation religious text for the laity. So it has all these songs about sins. So I have for us later, I can talk about the song about envy.
Closer.
So this dude, he was in the 15th century, a wandering performer and poet who composed all of these songs. So there's a song cycle, it's all in German, of the seven deadly sins to teach the laity about sins. And there's some interesting things about envy in here.
Presumably it's not a how-to.
No.
Might be.
No, it's not.
Okay.
Yeah. It's pretty graphic what happens to you. Okay. So where should we start with envy? Do you want to talk about the, just like a undergraduate essay, do you want to do the Webster's defines envy as...
Actually, I kind of want to talk about the Thunder Bay Community Church one just to get it out of my system.
Yeah, you've been chomping at that bit for a while.
It was so dumb. This was so stupid.
Okay. Well, tell us more about it, Jacob.
Okay. So as per always, we're opening up with a potential science experiment to teach us the virtue of thankfulness and the sin of envy in a dramatic metaphorical sort, like a metaphorical science experiment sort of way. This is a product by the Thunder Bay Community Church Salvation Army. So I'm going to call the narrator because I can't find her actual name, Thunder Bay Sally. Is that okay?
Thunder Bay Sally.
Yeah.
You better slow your Mustang down.
So in this one, we open with Thunder Bay Sally And Josephine is a small little girl. And I feel like I'm on thin ice here criticizing a child actor. But like she's got her tongue poking out of her mouth in such a way that makes her look like she's extraordinarily disinterested in this entire process.
Not wanting to be there?
Definitely not wanting to be there.
Not wanting to. And kind of, I don't know, there seemed to be some performative poutiness, maybe? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Also, she's wearing like a pretty, pretty princess shirt, which for an episode on Envy is kind of maybe on the nose. So in front of us, there's like a 3-gallon glass apothecary jar. Mm-hmm. And I figure this is kind of like that metaphor of like if you have a gun in the first scene of a movie, you better be firing somebody by the fifth scene.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's the largest vessel of water or liquid we've seen thus far.
I got excited.
Yeah, I had expected a very big baking soda explosion from that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was very disappointed because the entire experiment was make Josephine draw a picture of a house,
mm-hmm.
put the picture in a plastic bag, and this house is like everything she's thankful for. So her teddy bear and her house and... I don't know. A list of things she's thankful for. So she wraps it up in a plastic bag, which I was wondering, does that mean anything? Is this an art condom? And then she takes it and she ziplocks it up and she puts it in the jar. And then the camera goes to a like 80 degree overhead angle shot, like a very high shot. So diffraction makes the picture invisible.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't work from the side, though.
No, it doesn't. Like, you have to, like, totally go off screen and invoke, like, photo trickery, as in so many of her experiments, to make this work. And all we know is that from the right angle, the water of envy makes art of house invisible if you use photography trickery. And there's no part of this that makes me happy. As an experiment.
I have to say what I was expecting, and I was dreading this because of the horror it might, make the child feel, is that she was going to put the drawing in the water of envy and just all the ink was going to wash away.
Yeah. Or what if it was bleach? Like that a was, pot of bleach.
Right,
that'd be
awesome.
I was waiting for like
where the art starts foaming.
Yes. It didn't happen.
No. This was so dull.
It really was. It's almost like they've given up.
Yeah. I think that is my takeaway from Thunder Bay Sally this week is she's just phoning it in.
And I have to say, and I don't know what sin this is. Maybe this is, maybe it's snobbery. I don't know.
Cupidity.
But when I saw the drawing, I was like, there's no way Josephine drew that. It's way too good for a child of her surliness.
Well, there were a lot of film clips cuts, like lots and lots of cuts.
Mm. So maybe she had an outline already and like, oh, draw it into. But I was like, she didn't draw that. Maybe it's envy.
Not in the 2.5 minutes it was allowed.
No. Mm-mm.
But, so least convincing experiment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, yeah, I'm not sure what to say about that one. I think we've said all we need to say about it. You know what? When we finish The Sins, I'm going to miss these videos.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of videos.
Mm. Maybe we could watch some others. But I also, every time the music comes up, I think, why aren't we doing this? Why are we not doing this?
Yeah, like have a bunch of like foaming bottles and then explain how they reference like Welschmerz and
Schadenfreude, which is appropriate. Yeah,
vapidity, loose morals.
Oh my gosh. Okay, we got to work. We have so many ideas.
Fantods.
For a minute, I thought you were going to say famine. Which would be
not a sin, just deadly.
The liquid experiments of the apocalypse. Okay, so this is a random question. Do any of those experiments thus far constitute a cocktail?
No. Well, I mean, baking soda and vinegar is not very drinky. This is water. I don't know. There was one that like exploded with heat, and I'm worried about that one.
Yeah.
It could have been Fireball whiskey, but probably not.
Was there one, maybe I'm just imagining this, they didn't have safety goggles for any of them. I don't think.
I don't know.
Maybe I've just put that in my memory to make everything more exciting.
Mm-hmm. Like a blast shield.
I'm actually going to miss The Sins. I don't know. But again, we have a plan to go back through and have our, you know, episodes of Infinite Return because we are in hell and everything is cyclical.
We do have a YouTube channel. Back.
That's right. We could do our episodes of Eternal Return on the YouTubes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or have experiments on the YouTubes.
Oh, maybe representing demons.
Oh, I think we should just make up our insipidity.
All of the words that we like to use that nobody else knows the meaning of. Oh, I guess we should talk about envy, huh?
Yeah. I really found the Wikipedia definition, like the one it led with, it exciting and challenging. And I don't like leading with Wiki because that's bad podcasting. But what? It was. Yeah, well, there you go. What? Speaking the truth.
If Javen agrees.
When a person lacks another's quality, skill, achievement, or possession and wishes the other person lacked it as well.
That I don't one, know if I buy that.
That one is like, not only do I wish I were the podcast host, mm-hmm. I wish you weren't the podcast host. Like, neither of us need to be podcast hosts.
Right.
That's envy?
Well, I get it. I did find a lot of stuff about this where it's not necessarily that you wish you had it. It's right. Like the leveler is that nobody should have it.
Right. Like this is kind of me and my, like if I had a bad boss and just want them to lose everything mm-hmm. because what they have is like slightly better pay for a job I don't want.
And this goes back to, I read a really interesting medical article. And I'll talk a little bit more about this, but it was a article in Frontiers in Psychology. And it talked about, like, they did an experiment where they were asking people, who would they envy more or how they would feel about in certain scenarios? And one of the upshots is you don't envy somebody you don't know. It's always somebody close to you, like your neighbor who has something that you don't have or your colleague. But it's not like nobody really envies like Beyonce, you know, that's jealousy potentially, which I was going to talk about the difference. But it's not envy, like you don't want Beyonce to not have talent, but you are, you know, mad if your friend who you're taking ukulele lessons with is better than you.
Yeah. Aquinas addresses this in his Summa Theological. A commoner does not envy a king, and a king does not envy a commoner. You don't envy people that are vastly superior to you. I don't envy a basketball player or a physicist. Mm-hmm. Because those people are so different. You envy people that are close to you, that are in your, like, close to your level, mm-hmm. kind of in your field. Like, there was a podcast that was like three furries sitting on a couch talking about lifting weights, and they didn't do any editing. And it drove me up the wall that they had any sort of success whatsoever, because mm-hmm. I spend so much time editing and things like that. kind of a part of that is uh-huh. Aquinas says that the people that are the most envious are the ones that want to be honored the most.
Enter me.
Yeah. There's a strong pride envy. Like somehow these are two sides of the same coin.
It's true.
Can I throw one more in there before we start delving into all of them?
Definitions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got a few. I don't want to leave definitions yet.
Oh, okay. So Aristotle said envy is the pain at the sight of another's good fortune. And we had this conversation 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was like
opposite of Welshmertz.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's like, wait a second. Victoria is the podcast host tonight, and I'm suffering because of it? No.
I think we all suffer.
Rub it in, why don't you? But pain at another's good fortune. And it's not even another's success, it's their good fortune.
Mm-hmm. Right. And envy is about other people's success. It's grief at someone else's good. Mm-hmm. And again, on Aquinas, it's the opposite of pity. Pity is feeling pain because someone else is suffering pain. It's and this is kind of the opposite. This is feeling pain because someone else is experiencing positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it may not be right that you wish that person harm, but I'll talk about a little bit about that too. But yeah, it's just, you don't want that person to have that thing.
Right.
And you don't, maybe you don't want it necessarily either. It's just that you don't want anybody, like, you don't want anybody to have that thing, you know? Because you may not be able to do anything with it if you had it. Right?
Yeah, and there's like some text that it's about, like specifically it hints about station mm-hmm. and respect and things like that. Not necessarily like you can be jealous of a car.
Right.
But you're envious of like someone's applaud.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Yeah. And do we want to delve into the difference between envy and jealousy yet?
Sure, okay. sure.
So one of the things that I saw about jealousy is, like, as you said, jealousy relates to potentially things that you have and the fear of losing them.
Yeah, and significant others are very high on that list.
Mm-hmm. So something that you fear could be taken away. And it has to do mostly with, yeah, like ideas of possession, whilst
right.
envy is more about covetousness. And like you said, pride, really.
Yeah.
Like
and there's a little destruction in there as well. Not in all definitions, but mm-hmm. like a lot of it is like there's spite and there's that the if I can't have it, nobody can have it sort of thing.
Okay. Which one is the commandment? Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's jealousy.
I would argue yes.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be envious that your neighbor has a wife, but you can't covet her.
That's a good question. Because, yeah, covet seems to kind of bounce around here, right?
You can't be jealous of your neighbor's wife, but you can be envious of your neighbor?
Jealousy is not a sin.
But coveting mm-hmm. is...
Well,
it's a Ten Commandments sin. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's not a deadly sin.
Envy is the sin because envy can lead to other sins. Like it's connected to pride, for example. It can lead to things like it could lead to, I mean, in many cases, it could be lust. Interesting point. Men tend to covet straight men tend to covet. You know, other straight men for, like you said, their sexual conquests or their sexual prowess, whilst women tend to envy women more for things like looks and their success. And so there's a very different thing, but that, again, you've got lust there, you've got pride there. Those things can lead to worse sins. Gluttony could be a part of it too, because you want... You know, you don't want other people to have things, you want them, but I don't know.
The sloth connection. There's a sloth connection because sloth is scorning a spiritual good and envy is scorning a physical good.
Right. Yeah.
And they both have a certain level of like spite
mm-hmm.
And sullenness to them.
I think one of my favorite words is begrudging. And so
it's a nice word.
It is a nice word. So begrudging, I think, is a good synonym. Better maybe than coveting.
What do you think about this definition or this kind of thought about envy from Mark Watney, the Dappled Things blog?
Uh-huh.
Envy is the only sin with no pleasure.
Yes, I saw that. Sorry, I just screamed into the... That's exactly right. I saw that too.
Yeah, and I think I have a counter argument, but
okay.
But what do y'all think about that as a postulate?
I agree with that, and I can't remember where I saw it.
He said, I mean, envy. You don't want anything from it. You don't want anything good. Envy offers the sinner nothing but misery. I will say though, I think there is a certain joy here, and that is the joy of sitting on the back row. And making fun of people. Like there's a sullen community that can be found in the world of envy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the articles I've read on envy in the last 16 hours have said it's a solitary sin. It is not. It is a shared sin when you are a snarky person.
Like I think, okay, so we're getting into even more kind of splitting the word hairs.
Sure. That is what we're here for, isn't it?
Yes. Because there's like, okay, so, oh yeah, here it is. Is there any fun in envy? it's more of the cold-blooded end of sin. But I would agree, like, for, you know, for a lot of people, having envy is way more shameful than a lot of their feelings about other sins. Like, people do not like to admit they're envious, because that just seems like you're a terrible, terrible person. People understand lust, they understand gluttony, they understand pride, they understand anger, they understand sloth, but envy is one of those that is kind of like, I could see how they, how it's decided that it is clandestine. However, you're right, because there is the gossip end of it, like the Schadenfreude aspect of it. And it does form community, because it's like, okay, what is it? Any enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of situation?
No.
Well, I feel like anybody that would say that envy is not, is a solitary sin and doesn't bring joy has never experienced the world of catty gay men.
Good point. Very good point. Would you, but you're not, I don't, are you a catty gay man?
No.
He's a little bit catty.
A little bit catty. I can go there, but it's not my natural state. But it is part of the culture, and is a part of the culture that I think thrives on envy.
That's true. And I mean, there's also the cattiness of, you know, this women's are supposed to be catty. And I try to avoid the mean girls. Had enough of that in my life. Too many mean girls in the adult world. No. No, I say. okay. So I want to throw out another word here.
Before you do.
Yes.
Next week is going to be wrath.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And like, I've been thinking behind this, about this. What pleasure do you take from wrath?
Ooh. Yeah.
A moral outrage. Moral outrage. Yes,
exactly.
Moral outrage is really exciting.
Anger is purifying.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not a good feeling, but it is addictive. Mm-hmm. It triggers endorphins.
I guess that counts as pleasure. Okay. I withdraw my statement.
Biologically, it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we could talk more about that, but yes.
That's fair. Next week.
Next week with wrath. Another word that came up in my research was yearning.
Mm, okay.
What do you think the relationship between envy and yearning is?
Well, yearning is like unrequited. It's something that cannot be fulfilled, and that's kind of the point of the emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But like it can have a holy element too. Like longing is mm-hmm. not... It's not separate as an idea.
Right. Yeah. And then there's kind of yearning can also be right. Like it's yearning. Okay. So my understanding, nostalgia is related to yearning, but yearning is not necessarily something you have already experienced or will ever experience. Whereas nostalgia is more kind of connected to things that you have experienced or was in the realm of possibility for you. I felt like this was a really poetic sin.
I think that it's a very writerly and literary sin in particular.
Yeah. There's so many examples of envy in that drive literature.
Specifically to the separation of jealousy and envy, Encyclopedia Britannica, envy is more than simple jealousy because it includes the belief that another's excellence or blessings lessens one's own. Mm-hmm. And makes one want to destroy another's good fortune.
Right. So ergo that allegedly disappearing house in our experiment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the Snow White Wicked Queen, I want to be the most beautiful of all and I'll destroy you, is like so it for me still.
Mm-hmm. And also part of it being a sin is because it doesn't allow you to see your own good. And what the good that has been bestowed upon you by God, which what is it? Thunder Bay Sally references.
Right. Mm-hmm. It stops you from appreciating. Mm-hmm. And appreciation is like is opposing an idea for envy.
Yes. And I have to say, like, I prickled at some of this because I really dislike the forced march of gratitude that happens in our culture, where it's just like, I have to be grateful. I can't, you know, be discontent at all. I got to be grateful. Because that also just makes you just too accepting of things, potentially.
And I want to talk about later about envy as a positive force. I feel we've got a lot to say about that.
Definitely.
One more deadly sin that it's related to. Mm-hmm. And this is one of my favorites, vainglory.
Oh, you love a vainglory.
I do love a good vainglory. Vainglory craves, this is complex wording. Vainglory craves for the power of an empty name and pines for fear lest another should acquire that power.
Mm, okay. Yes. Yes. I like vainglory. And so, but okay, so vainglory, though, is also, does that fall into the bucket of pride, too?
It's one of the demi-sins of pride, yes.
Okay. The demi-prides?
Demi-sin, yeah. I'm just going to throw this out here again. You know what we really need to do?
What?
Purgatorio. I know we have to.
I was really impressed by the way the envious were not punished, but like processed in Purgatorio. Mm-hmm. This is very cool. They ready for some eye stuff? You said we'd be facing eye stuff.
Oh my God, there's so much eye stuff. Uh-huh.
And on the Mount of Purgatory, the envious would willingly have their eyes sewn shut so they couldn't compare themselves to other people. And that was how they purged themselves of the sin of envy.
Uh-huh. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a sin of, it's a sin of the gaze. Not the gaze with a Y, but the gaze with a Z.
I was thinking, Victoria, just say that?
It's the sin of the gaze. Okay. The gaze, eyeball gaze, not
the sin gaze. Of the looking at.
The sin of the looking at. was... the sin. We missed an opportunity. We should have done Pride during Pride Week.
It's true. It's true. You're right. Good call.
I wish next regret year. Was a sin. it would make all my regrets so much more interesting.
It may be related to sloth.
I think it might be. Yeah. Oh, I just have a note here that I didn't quite explain to myself, but I have faith envy.
Faith envy. Oh, yeah. Because the envy of the spiritual is, of course, a very high level sin. Yeah. So again, that makes you blind to your own success. Mm-hmm. And there's level of spiritual pride there because you're kind of elevating yourself over someone else. Mm-hmm. It makes it to where other people's spirituality is insufferable to you.
Right. Okay. That explains my note.
I'm glad you could help. Hey, did you know that Envy has daughters?
Oh, yeah. Could you please tell us about Envy's daughters?
Sure. And again, this is Pope Gregory informing us of these things. No one has sons. I wonder why that's the case. Mm. Envy's daughters are hatred, tail-bearing, which is like throwing shade, detraction, which is also throwing shade. Mm. I think there may be a distinction there that I'm not clear on. Joy at our neighbor's misfortunes and grief for his prosperity, which I think those last two are kind of defining envy, actually.
And those are long names for a daughter.
right. Yeah, it didn't fit on the birth certificate so well.
Oh, did I have a connection to the daughters of... I don't think I did.
I just don't feel like Gregory was really inspired on those, though.
No. He was not. The daughters make me think about other personifications of envy, specifically the demonic. So
always.
Yes. So what is our big demon associated with envy?
Leviathan. And I'm kind of unclear why.
Because she wants to be a crab.
She wants jealous of the crab.
She's already a crab. Everything's a crab.
So people say that Aquinas references this, but I cannot find the source. And everybody has the same language. Like all websites say, Aquinas says that Leviathan punishes the envious first and foremost, but I can't find that anywhere. The only thing I can find is that Job mentions Leviathan fairly extensively. It's one of the only biblical callouts for them. And this is when, okay, so Job has been suffering for 40 chapters and finally says, why God, why?
Poor
and
God. Poor, God, poor guy.
God just swoops in and says, how dare you? I am bigger than you by so much, exponentially bigger than you. And you can't imagine how much bigger I am than you. And his comparison point after saying, I'm God, shut up, is, could you tame Behemoth? Can you pull in Leviathan with a fish hook or tie its tongue down with a rope? Can you make a pet of it? its undersides are jagged potsherds, leaving a trail in the mud like a threshing sledge. It makes the depths churn like a boiling cauldron and stirs up the sea like a pot of ointment. It leaves a glistening wake behind it. No one would think the deep had white hair. Nothing on earth is its equal. A creature without fear. It looks down all that are haughty. It is king over all that are proud. The only thing I can see is that Leviathan is a powerful, dominant, invincible creature, and so is Envy. It's a really weak connection, but there you go.
Yeah, I still don't get it. I really don't.
A fine connection is that Leviathan is Satan. Like, that is...
Right.
That is part of it. And mm-hmm. Satan's first fall, like... Lucifer fell from pride.
Mm-hmm.
Satan fell from envy.
Right. What? Which goes into the, well, it kind of goes into the Adam story.
Right.
That we've talked about. Do, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They are tied together and rather extensively through St. Cyprian of Carthage.
Tell us more.
Well, so we're in the realm of the demonic here because the devil is the Cyprian of Carthage, I think 700 or so AD. The devil died when he fell. He saw man created in the image of God. He erupted into jelly and jealousy and malevolent like jelly. Envy. Jelly erupted into jelly. Before casting another down by jealousy, he himself was cast down by jealousy. He took from man away the grace of immortality, which he had first lost himself.
Mm-hmm.
In committing the sin of envy, he falls. He becomes mortal-ish. And then he takes down Adam with him. And for the longest time, the devil's primary sin was this vicious envy. That was what caused him to create the fall, because he was so jealous of man who was created in the image of God. This changes in like medieval, and I have theories as to why, which I'll go into in a bit. But yeah, this comes up in the life of Adam and Eve. I will not worship one inferior and subsequent to me. I am prior to him in creation. Before he was made, I was already made. He ought to worship me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's me, Satan, not me, Jacob.
I mean, yeah.
Later, speaking to the serpent, come, let us make him to be cast out of paradise through his wife, just as we were cast out through him.
Mm.
So yeah, Satan's primary sin is envy.
Okay.
And Lucifer's fall is pride. We'll get to pride eventually. I have a theory that the reason is medieval hierarchy is so important, because envy is a sin that kills equals and destroys villages and small communities. Pride is a sin that leads to rebellion and like the death of kings.
Well, Nietzsche said, though, that envy is what leads to revolution. That it's Nietzsche.
yeah. This is true. But the desire to see oneself as an equal to kings is kind of similar. And pride and envy are so subtle.
It's true.
Differences are very subtle.
Uh-huh.
But you can't say envy goeth before the fall.
No, definitely not. And it's true. Like, it's kind of a weird... So Nietzsche argues that envy causes revolutions, but that's sort of a very Marxist idea of envy, which may or may not really play out so well, I think.
Would you say
capitalism is a better understanding of envy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, so would you say Che Guevara and Fidel Castro were motivated by envy to free Cuba?
I think that's kind of getting into the question of, is there any true altruism? Like, nothing is pure. There are no pure emotions. There are certainly no pure political movements.
No, there's always somebody who suffers in a revolution.
Yeah.
Usually like it's women.
Envy, envy on behalf of your people? Is that envy or is that something else?
Right. And is it actually, trying to... I mean, wrath is part of it, potentially. But pure, like, you know, justifiable wrath in many cases.
Yeah. And that sounds like a very, like you said, a very kind of Marxist sort of envy. Like, envy is my revolution, not yours.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why, you know, you have these revolutions that splinter too, you know, but that's also pride, I think. I don't know. It's interesting because, yeah, I saw some of the stuff sort of arguing both that Marxism is kind of a envy fueled thing, but capitalism, like envy, is kind of a product of capitalism as well. I don't know.
This is political science, and that's a different kind of hell.
Oh, it is a different, yeah, that's a different podcast. So the other entity that may be more fitting to other conversations about envy is Abazu. Do you remember Abazu from the Testament of Solomon?
Isn't she a Lilith?
She is a Lilith. Yes, good.
She's the lady that has mule legs.
She has,
is interestingly the second demon mentioned in the Testament of Solomon, which kind of makes her akin to like a Hierus Gamos of Baal and Astaroth, because she is the female and Beelzebul is the male sacred pair.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So she is has a greenish gleaming face and disheveled serpent-like hair.
Very Lilith.
Very Lilith. Well,
not the green so much.
No, but it sort of goes into like a lot of our ideas about witches. But she does not sleep, but rather she wanders the world looking for women about to give birth. Given the opportunity, she will strangle newborns. So this theme comes up a lot in stories about envy. And she claims also to be a source of many other afflictions, including deafness, eye trouble.
Oh.
Also shows up a lot. Obstructions of the throat, madness, and bodily pain.
Hmm.
So, but yeah, so Beelzebub is also he admits in the Testament that he inspires envy among humans. So he is the male part of this, but, there's a whole other thing about envy is described as headless and motivated by the need to steal another's head. So,
oh, is that why you were talking about the Wicked Witch and the Wizard of Oz?
What's her name? Queen
Mombi.
Mombi, yeah.
Mombi, yeah. Yeah, that we were just talking about that with my sister yesterday, and what a lasting scar that movie left on her.
It's, yeah. I think when we get to Pride, we have to talk about the glass cat.
He's true. He's good.
Mm-hmm. So those are our demons. Do we want to talk about the Bible and some little children's Bible stories that about envy?
Yeah, there's a couple of good ones. So one challenge I had with envy in general, and I think this is part of the way it's a sin of equals, is it seems fundamentally a literary tragedy sin. Mm. Like when you're trying to find like most wrathful person, no problem.
Right.
Trying to find most lustful, slothful person, no problem. Finding the most envious person is difficult because it is kind of internal. It's kind of between equals, which makes it not a very historical sin. So everything is like literary references and Bible references and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is some, you know, literary descriptions of characters that bear the burden of envy, and they tend to follow like, they seem to be like rapacious, you know, like they are pale and look emaciated and are kind of mad.
Iago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
A huge one. Iago was for reasons that are unclear, just decided that Othello could not have a wife or happiness and just set out to destroy him with no gain for himself.
That's right. And like Uriah Heep and David Copperfield, and there's also a lot of subterfuge in these characters as well. Like there's sort of pandering, and the overpraising is another indicator of somebody who is envious.
Because they're clearly cogitating here about,
But
yeah, charming Bible stories for children. I assume you're going to leave with Cain and Abel.
Yes.
Cain and Abel. Right. Yeah.
So do we need a recap of the story of Cain and Abel?
Once upon a time, there were two little boys, and they loved God very much. and God, they decided to give God a thanks celebration. And Cain gave God, I think, bushels of wheat, the first part of his harvest. Abel gave God what he likes, blood. And God said, this is better. I like the blood. Mm-hmm. And so Cain said, oh, you like blood, do you? Mm-hmm. And offed his brother.
Yes, that's a very good read of it. And it was the first keto diet as well. God was on the keto diet. Yes. Go ahead.
The reason for this killing is sometimes speculated that really what Cain wanted was Abel's wife.
Yes.
Which is simultaneously jealousy and incest.
Yep. So there's...
And self-cest.
Self-cest. It's true. Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff to read in here. And just a new take that I'd seen about it that I hadn't heard before. So the story is dated typically between the 6th century BC and the first decades of the 4th century.
That recent? I'm surprised.
Yeah, but supposedly it's also an allegory for agriculture, like moving from grain-based agriculture to animal husbandry. So it's kind of a story about that progression and also connected to the Sumerian myths, specifically the courtship of Inanna and is it Dumuzid? Dumuzid?
Inanna and Tammuz?
Maybe. Yes. Uh-huh.
Tammuz.
So I thought that was interesting.
I can't remember.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so also Abel's name is related to a word for herder and Cain's to a word for, weirdly enough, metalsmith.
So, right. Did you need metal to...
Yes.
To harvest animals.
Yeah. I was doing a scythe moment for all of our listeners at home.
Well, and metalsmithing is civilization at mm-hmm. its heart. And so it's kind of implies civilization.
So I thought that was interesting. So I've got a couple more that maybe some lesser known ones. So do you know the story of Sarah and Hagar? And it's not Hagar the Horrible.
I was about to ask just that. No, I don't actually.
That's actually one of my favorite, Onion little blurbs is today's Hagar the Horrible hit a little too close to home. It's a classic. Hagar was bought to be a concubine of Abraham since Sarah was childless and apparently barren. So Hagar became pregnant with who would later become Ishmael, who God said would be a wild ass of a man. But because she had a...
Hashtag goals.
Exactly, a wild ass of a man. So because she had a child and she was fertile, Sarah was not, she became arrogant. And she was also treated poorly by Sarah, understandably. And so she ran away. But eventually Sarah also had a son named Isaac. And she saw Isaac and Ishmael playing together and banished Hagar and her son to the desert. So here we have one of those female jealousy stories of, again, involving childbirth and envy over childbirth and punishment for somebody who had what somebody does not. So
also separation of twins. Mm-hmm. Vanishing into the wilderness.
Yes.
That's also Cain. That's also up a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so we also have the story of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. So Joseph's brothers envied his fancy, fancy coat. And so they sell him to a party of Ishmaelites who take him away to...
Now,
yes?
In fairness, they probably weren't envious of the coat so much as what the coat is representing.
Exactly. No, it's all about the coat.
Which is daddy's love.
Yes. So the coat, the covering of daddy's love... they're envious of. And so because he is clearly good at, he's a charmer, he gains favor with the Pharaoh.
I was going to say sight reading, but that's...
But also he interprets a dream of the Pharaoh and becomes kind of a, you know, high person in his court. And he also acquires grain to end a famine. And... so he has he has saved parts of Egypt. And so his brothers come to obtain food and they, you know, try to get forgiveness from Joseph. But they don't recognize who he is at first. And so once he reconciles with his brothers, he invites the whole household to come to Goshen, and he takes care of them forever and ever. And this is actually one story where envy worked out for everybody's benefit, because it protected the family and therefore all of Egypt from famine. So this is where envy had a good end, because if he'd never gone, if he'd never been sold, he never would have ended the famine. So net good.
Yeah, I suppose.
Sorry about that slavery thing. This one is a little more interesting. Saul and David. You know about Saul and David?
No, I don't, actually. We're in the Old Testament stories. I'm less good here.
Yes.
Unless somehow a goat demon is involved.
Oh, sorry. But this involves madness.
Oh.
And I watched a really good animated video on this for children.
I watched a science experiment by Thunder Bay Sally.
So the Israelites wanted a king. And Samuel thought this was a terrible, terrible idea. But he appointed Saul nonetheless to be the king of the Israelites. So Saul was not a good king, started to lead the Israelites away from God. So Samuel decided, okay, we probably need to get a new king. So he went around, he found this man, Jesse, and Jesse brought out his sons. He had like several really young, strapping sons. And then his youngest son, David, who was kind of, you know, smart, but not so impressive. But he got a sense that David would be a good guy, anointed him. The minute he anointed David, Saul started to go crazy.
It happens.
Yes. So because the spirit, because when you anoint somebody, the spirit goes into that person. So the spirit left Saul.
Oh, that's not fair.
And
that's not envy. That's like reasonable anger.
Yes.
It happens.
So the spirit physically left Saul, went to David. Saul starts to go crazy. The only thing that will keep Saul from just freaking the F out is for David to play the harp for him. So David starts playing the harp for Saul, but then Saul starts to get jealous or envious because David's wildly popular. He slays the giant. He's really good at playing the harp. Everybody loves him. And so Saul kept trying to kill David in various ways, including like shooting an arrow at his head.
Spy versus spy.
It really is. It really is.
Exploding harps.
It was crazy.
Those endearing young charms.
So, Saul's son, though, saw what was happening, realized that dad is going nutty, and so he helped David escape. And eventually Saul was killed in battle, and David came back at that point and became king. That was probably the most exciting story, and it's really good animated. So the last one I have is another baby-related one. So this is Rachel and Leah. Do you know this one?
Oh, that's been a minute since Rachel and Leah.
I know.
My story is going to be New Testament, so I'm happy about that.
Okay, yeah. So we've got, these are all Old Testament. So this is a baby arms race. Baby arm race. Baby arms race. Like treating babies, weaponizing babies. Let's just say weaponizing babies.
At 8:51, Victoria descended into gibbering madness.
That's because the spirit left her.
It's now in one of my cats. meow. Yes, we are weaponizing babies at this point. This is a story of Jacob, who ran away from Esau and wound up at his uncle Laban's house. So he was going to get killed, right? So he runs to Uncle Laban's house. Laban has two daughters, Rachel and Leah. So Rachel is younger, Leah is older.
So when you talk about biblical family values.
Yes, this is a perfect story for that. In order to stay at Laban's house, Jacob has to work for him. So he's working, and he falls in love with Rachel. So after a certain period of time, Laban's like, you know what? I probably should pay you. I forgot. Sorry. My bad. What do you want? And so Jacob says, well, I'd really like to have Rachel. And so Laban says, done. You got Rachel. However, you have to work for me for 7 years. And so he's like, sure, whatever. So wedding night, have a big party. He goes to, you know, be with his new wife. In the morning, he finds out it's Leah. Oopsie. So Jacob is necessary. Like, yes, of course he's upset by this because he's in love with Rachel. Laban tricked him.
I have a question.
Yes.
How did he miss that?
That is a very good question, because they're described as poor, poor Leah. She's described as having weak eyes. So eyes show up again, and Rachel is beautiful. So I think drunkenness had a little bit to do with this. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think drunkenness and maybe some veils. Who knows? But so Laban says, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You can also marry Rachel, but you have to work for me for another 7 years. So Jacob's like, okay, whatever. So a week later, he gets to marry Rachel. And then the baby arms race begins.
Right.
The weaponized babies.
Two tribes here. This is the story of Israel's ancestral something. And it's important to kind of lay out these like long-term plots.
Oh my God. And there's so many charts of the begots here.
Yes.
But the best moment from this video,
we're still in Genesis. There's still like 146 Genesis. Books to go.
Yeah. The best moment from this video that I watched for kids was, you know, the minute that Laban's like, yeah, sure, you can marry Rachel too. They were very careful to say, even though a man should only have one wife. So here it's okay. This is a Bible story. It's okay to have multiple marriages, but you should only have one wife. So Leah was like, she caught on pretty quickly that Jacob loved Rachel more, so she became humiliated, and God saw her pain and gave her a child, and this is a very important child, Judah. Who eventually gets us to Jesus. So Leah is why.
And Solomon, actually,
yes.
I think.
Uh-huh. So we've got this line, like Leah's humiliation leads us to Jesus, essentially. So Rachel wanted to have a baby then because she was pissed off. So she has her servant sleep with Jacob. More kids are born. Then Leah has her servant sleep with Jacob. So even more babies are born.
No wonder this is an anime.
So it's like, you know, remember Jiffy Pop? Like, this is what's happening baby-wise with all of these servants and Leah and Rachel. The best part, though, is so after like the all of the just babies are popping everywhere, Rachel, so Leah digs up this like huge mandrake. And so Rachel trades Jacob for this mandrake.
Okay.
And so then Jacob and Leah continue to have more kids. And then Rachel had kids too.
Oh,
so
good.
Everybody has kids. One of them winds up with a mandrake. Everybody's happy, except so many kids. But again, this is a place where envy worked out, because without envy, we would not have had Jesus. That's the takeaway here. So
another Bible story is the story of the prodigal son. This is one of the Jesus parables, and Jesus parables tend to be very they leave you unsettled and confused, because ultimately a lot of them are trying to underline that you cannot understand God completely.
Right.
So the prodigal son, there's this guy, he's a wealthy cow person, you know, has a ranch, that sort of thing. Has two sons, gives one of them because he demands it his inheritance. That son goes out into the wilderness, no, into the city, and like spends all of it on whores and blow. And then much later comes back starving and hungry and says to his father something like, just give me a crust of bread and let me sleep in the barn and I'll be happy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be fine. And instead, the father like says, oh, no, welcome back, my son. And he kills the fatted calf for him, has a big party and celebrates. Look, my son has come back. And kind of the flip side of this is his other son is very upset by this, because he's like, you did all these things to this guy that spent all our money on whores and blow. That's kind of where the story ends, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The side point is that the good son really is inheriting everything. He's the main son.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, how does God do this? And all these things are kind of explaining God's infinite love and the kingdom of heaven and how we get what we don't deserve. One element of the story that doesn't translate to the 20th century reader is the idea of famine, because the story would take place in a time of famine. Mm-hmm. So the son goes away into an uncertain future where he might like die of starvation, and he comes back and he's fed. So there's a level of like hunger need that is present in the story that we don't necessarily get.
Right. And that's part of the Joseph story, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Right. Mm-hmm. So this kid is fairly, the good son is quite jealous because he's the good son. But I was reading, I think this is once again from the Dappled Things blog by Mark Watney, talking about this story. And I really liked this because it felt good for me. In the kingdom of heaven, there is no justice. And the envious do not necessarily embrace God's kingdom because envy demands justice. Mm-hmm. We want people to deserve their place in heaven. And we want to deserve our place in heaven. And if you go to heaven, you're going to see people that are like filled with people that don't deserve it,
right,
but repented at the last minute. And that's going to be upsetting. Like, who are all these lazy losers up here when I worked hard? Maybe I don't want to be part of this heaven.
Right.
So that's a place mm-hmm. where envy separates you from the love of God.
Right.
And that really, like, that kind of worked for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He goes on to say, whoever wishes, and this is a quote from Bertrand Russell, whoever wishes to increase human happiness must wish to increase admiration.
Hmm. That's interesting. Huh.
So, again, tell me about your background, the background picture.
Oh, yes. Well, it all began. Atropaic? Is that, am I saying it correctly?
Apotropaic.
Apotropaic.
Not allowed in this household.
Symbols to ward off the evil eye.
A very feminine curse, I understand.
Yes, it is. And so this all goes into the dangers of being enviable.
Okay.
So there's many dangers of being enviable. Bad things will happen to you if you're enviable. So you do need to ward off envy. And I want to start with a few different. I want to talk about the Greeks, and then I want to talk about the Romans, because okay. the Romans eventually borrow some of these ideas from the Greeks, as they're wont to do. Initially, there's a lot of things that go along with envy and the dangers to the enviable. And I'm trying. Oh, here we go. So the Greeks believed that looking at somebody in envy, that's where the harm is. Like, you can harm somebody by looking at them enviously.
Okay.
However,
okay.
there's some disagreement, or possibly like are you aware of this power that you have? Some people may not be aware of this power. Some may. So is this a malicious act? Is it just something that you can't help? Right. So you also, at least in the Greek tradition, have to work to make yourself unenviable, because it's just part of nature. So you can't avoid envy. It's just going to happen. And people, yeah, like, you can't avoid people being envious. Like, you can't avoid being envious of other people. The thing is, though, the gods also envy people. So you have to be careful to not be hubristic, so that you don't incur the wrath of the gods as well. So, like, the whole...
Oh, this is the Ariadne-Athena weaving contest,
yes,
story.
And the whole origin of love that we talked about, where Zeus, right, saw, like, because that equals power. Like, a lot of this, when people become hubristic, then they become dangerous to the gods. And also the gods are engaged in a lot of envy, vengeance against each other. We have a lot,
true,
of stories about that too. So gods, yeah, again, are like envy monsters.
Yeah. And envy is a very literary sin again.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so the Greeks built a lot of things into their society to kind of mitigate the harms of envy. Okay. So one of these is ostracism. Do you know the true meaning of ostracism? Jamin, this may be up your alley.
That's the thing where you take vegetables and you blend them together.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's a Vita. That's a Vitamix-ism.
Oh.
Close. Ostracism in the Greek world was when you removed a political leader from office because they were being hubristic. Therefore, they were incurring envy, which could be dangerous. So they would.
I really like the idea of removing a hubristic leader.
I know, right? So they were removed. They were exiled. They kept their property and they were exiled for 10 years. But it was they were expected to come back. So they would keep their citizenship. But by then, hopefully everything would die down and nobody cared about them anymore. Gosh, wouldn't that be great? But take away the property.
I love this plan.
I love this idea. Also, another way to ward off envy was any victor in any kind of competition, specifically athletes, would lavish, they would lavish gifts upon the citizenry. So you would be happy about somebody's goodwill because you would get something from it, right? So we need then to talk about how this winds up with ending up with these evil eye the evil eye repellents that I have behind me. So in the Greek world, anybody who looked enviously at something filled the air with a pernicious effect. So that could be infectious to both the living and any objects around you. Okay, so this is a very real danger. So hold on to that thought. The possessor of this malignant glance tends to be female. Not necessarily always, but tends to be an older single woman. And again, this could be unintentional, but the power, it could be something that is within that family, the power to cast the evil eye. So you hear about this in a lot of folk traditions. It's not just Greeks or Romans. This comes into a lot of like South American and
the evil
European.
Eye just is a powerful, powerful superstition.
Italy, we see a lot of it. So the victim is usually either a child, a baby, or a pregnant woman or bride. So this also usually comes with extensive praise. So you should be afraid of any single woman, specifically if she has blonde hair and blue eyes, praising you or your baby way too much.
Okay.
So the reason why the whole like blonde hair and blue eyes is because, say, like, if this kind of came from, you know, the more like Islamic faiths and, you know, sort of a world of darker hair, darker eyed people. So anybody who had these attributes was sort of seen as unnatural. So you then were probably somebody who had this power, had kind of occult powers in your family. Therefore, you could cast the evil eye. So, ergo, why these symbols tend to be blue eyes.
Okay.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So blue, I mean, we see green as a color of envy, but also blue is because it symbolized that gaze, right? Not the gaze, the gaze, the eyeball gaze. So you have all these repellents, most notably the evil eye, which you see in a lot of different cultures. Of course, we've got the blue one. The drink is the Greek, you know, the Greek evil eye. But you also have, you know, in South America, specifically like Mexico, you have those, the like tin eyes that you see, like, and those are also to cure afflictions of the eyes. So I'll talk a little bit about that in a moment. But so you have a variety of repellents, these symbols, but also given the idea that wet is healthier than dry, and wet is life-giving and dry is life-taking. Also, liquids are important here. So you get a lot of spit. Spitting is another way to ward off the evil eye. You have a lot of spitting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen this. Exactly. So you get a lot of spitting. You get a lot of like licking of fingers and anointing children with saliva. The people who are, this is something that I, in Rome, in Roman culture, the people who are able to cast the evil eye, either intentionally or unintentionally, are called jettatore. So then these people are in some cases assumed or described as having double pupils.
Hmm.
So you have, if you see somebody with either blue eyes or double pupils, those are the people, there's jettatore, who can cast the evil eye. So this is where we get into the whole idea of like eye afflictions going along with the idea of envy, and sort of like envy is a sin of the eyes and or an affliction of the eyes.
Oh, and the word envy, like it means to see, is the Latin root.
Yes. Uh-huh. So the first mention of this double pupil situation was from Pliny the Elder in Natural History.
Oh, boy.
Yep. And so in his...
Pliny is my totem animal.
So he also describes not only the double pupil, but also a person having a double pupil and then a pupil that looks like a horse. So both are bad.
Specific.
Both of these can cast the evil eye. Most likely unintentional. Yeah, so that is where you get the idea of the evil eye and the idea that anybody can cast the evil eye unintentionally, intentionally. Do not
simply through envy.
Do not be a tall poppy. Do not incur envy lest you be harmed. That's the lesson of the day. So this leads us, we were just talking about how this could be, it's probably unintentional, the casting of the evil eye. So this leads me to my final question. Is this just human nature?
Is envy just human nature?
Yeah.
More so than the other deadly sins?
Yes. Is it something that we cannot stop? Like, are we just... This is completely we cannot do anything about envy. We are just always going to have envy in our souls.
Let me broaden this from human nature to animal nature.
Okay.
Because if you give a dog a bigger bone than his friend has, guess what happens? If you
right.
give
you get an Aesop's fable.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you give two monkeys, like, six bananas, something science, I don't know, I didn't do the research.
I mean, the dogs we have here, there are two of them, if you give them both a lovely bone, then very soon one dog has two bones.
But is that envy or gluttony?
I don't know.
Or is it just instinct, like, oh, food is scarce, I need to take all of the food.
Well, they're also the playful creatures, and some of this is just like the fun of taking something away from someone else, and it goes back and forth. So I don't know. But I mean, we are innately like competitive, and envy, as you've said a few times, is not necessarily the worst thing in the world.
Yes. Is there an evolutionary value to envy?
So the goddess of envy is strife, is Eris Discordia.
Mm-hmm.
Who in the Testament of Solomon is the one that's described as the worst. And she is pretty bad. She's like, she like cackles when war happens.
Mm-hmm.
She just bathes in affliction and creates strife and is like Ares's worst sister. She's a pretty awful figure.
Mm-hmm.
The one positive reference to her is from Hesiod, who says something along the lines of, but she has a good side, which is that strife leads people to better themselves. Envy leads people to better themselves. It does not have to be that bad if it encourages you towards your higher self or to being better. Eudaimonia, like the strife itself makes you grow. So there is benefit in that it prevents being too content.
Yes. And so this goes back to my weird little obsession with the forced march of gratitude, because discontent is how you change. Like, that's the first step in change, is recognizing there's some discontent. And it's just, okay, do you stay in that discontent or do you do something to get out to fix it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, envy is not necessarily the worst thing in the world. And I don't know if evolutionarily speaking, it would lead you to better places, but like, for the last few thousand years, competition over goods has, you know, increases production.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
But evolutionarily, I don't know.
What do you think, Jamin?
Is it human nature? And if so, does it absolve us of sin? Or is it animalistic nature and our human nature should be the one that overcomes the envy to absolve us of our sin?
There's that connection of envy and justice, that they're kind of related ideas. And like chimpanzees have a strong sense of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like part of the same like handful of coins as envy, because like recognizing that someone else has gotten more than I do is not fair. And that not fairness does sting.
But is there such a thing as fair? Is fairness real or is it a construct?
It's a construct.
Right. I think fairness can only exist when you have more than someone else.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not to be too cynical.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. It's, you know, kind of like the, you know, everything to a lot of people, everything is pie and there's only so much pie, when in reality there is not, you know, there's plenty of pie, or maybe it's not even pie, you know, but there's this sense of like having to carve out your piece and that there's such a thing as deserve when right. there's really yeah. not a thing such as deserve, right?
These are all challenging concepts, mm-hmm. yes. Yeah. I don't know. Is envy human nature? I think it probably is. It's a sin that manifests in children at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fairness and like fairness in an unfair world can turn into envy. We kind of just talked about that right now. So
mm-hmm.
it is very basic to us. And it's something we learn at the youngest age, is that there are ideas of right. And if something is wrong, then I'm suffering. Even if I have more bananas that I can possibly eat.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, is that human nature? Is it more human nature than any other deadly sins? That's hard to say. They're all kind of part of our monkey brain stuff.
And I mean, they all, you know, again, going back to the whole idea of like, which of these sins are necessary for survival? And gluttony, you know, tamed gluttony, like appetite is necessary. Food, you know, lust is necessary for the survival of the species, or at least procreation is. But yeah, envy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, except that envy is like probably in some way a child of generosity and altruism.
Right.
Like uh-huh. it's maybe it's part of the same collection of drives that makes us want to give people things.
Mm-hmm.
Like seeing someone else suffering from unfairness is beneficial to the city. It's like, maybe envy is related to empathy in that it's something that you can see in other people. Like it's part of being able to see unfairness for other people.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
The unfairness sense is a superpower.
Yeah.
And it can be used badly.
Mm.
Yeah, that's true.
Yay, I have a thesis now.
Good for you. Yay, you. So I'm going to ask you a question that I think you already have the answer to.
Best kind of question.
So I'd like to phone a friend.
Uh-huh. So what occupation or field do you think is the most rife with envy?
Shoo, goodness gracious.
What?
Taxi cab drivers.
Nope. Another guess?
Real estate agents.
That's a good one.
I think that's a legit one.
Okay, so you're going to go with real estate agents?
I think so.
Podcast hosts.
Oh, you're so close. It's a field where the stakes are way lower than the people involved think they are.
Oh, meteorologists.
Meteorologists.
No.
Weather girls.
Where
stakes are way lower.
So what occupation or do people take like their tiny plot of land and they guard it voraciously and nobody else cares about that plot of land except for them, And they just constantly are envious of other people who are getting more attention for their plot of land. And the plot of land is metaphorical. You give up?
Yes.
Yes.
Academia. Academia.
Oh.
Academia.
Damn it.
Academia. Okay. I'll buy that. Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the best quote, I will end with this quote because it's one of my favorite quotes from literature. It is from Eudora Welty's story, The Petrified Man. Mm-hmm. If you're so smart, why ain't you rich?
Christ, I wish I knew that answer. That hurts.
And scene.
What's next on the slate? I guess next on the slate is Wrath.
Yes.
Yay.
That's Jamin's favorite.
No, that's mine.
That's right.
That's going to be, that's me.
So Jamin's a sloth.
Oh,
is sloth your favorite?
Right.
You're sloth. So you're sloth. Ooh. I'm envy.
John was doing Pride. It's wrapping up Pride.
No. I thought sure it was Wrath.
What?
No!
Come on, guys. You're not paying enough attention to me.
Do we need to listen to the last episode to figure this out?
So I guess we're Wrath. Wrath. We're gonna wrath this up. So anywho, thank you for joining us on the Dispatchist. Please visit.
What? We have a new friend. We have a friend in Bill.
Oh, we have a friend in Bill?
We have another Patreon member.
Oh, yay. Hi, Bill.
So now we've gotten to the, maybe we're getting to the point where we can have special content for our Patreon members.
Maybe. And I will tell Bill that all of his donations go straight to Esoterica, another podcast.
So I guess we're going to wrap this up. Thank you for joining us. And please visit our website at... Please say the web address, Jacob.
Dispatch.ist.
Yes, where you can see our past episodes. You can connect with us, and you can
our video from the last one.
Yes,
from Furry Fiesta.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things you can enjoy on our website, and you can visit us on various social media platforms. And until next time, we will see you in hell.
Toodles.
Bye. Okay.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by The Dispatchist and is Creative Commons. You're welcome to reuse with attribution. Look for us on your favorite podcast app. Say hi to us on Twitter or Gmail at The Dispatchist, no spaces. Check out our website, dispatch.ist, for episodes, show notes, and a variety of hellish resources. ¶¶